And we're holding on Sadiq Ches Amun Beis, the second line. We're in the middle of the Gemara had brought the pasuk Zoisa Torah La Ola La Mincha Vla Chatas Vla Osham Vla Miluim Vla Zevach Hashlamim. So we have a whole catalog of korbanos, and we have a hekesh between them. So the Gemara is saying that each one of them teaches us a particular din that it says by that korban, which we learn from that, from this hekesh, that it applies to all korbanos. So we said by Ola, there's the fact that you need a knife to shecht it, that you can't shecht it, for example, with a sharpened stone, which we see by the Akedah, which was going to be, originally Yitzchak was going to be an Ola, and then a ram was substituted for him, and it specifically mentions that he used a macheles. Then we said from the fact that it says mincha, we were learning that just like a mincha is eaten only by the male kohenim, so the other korbanos. But the question is, then which ones are we learning? The chatas and the osham, it says by them explicitly. The shalmei tzibur, we have a different ribui in the pasuk. So the Gemara had said, in fact, you're right. There are different tanoim. Some learn it from this pasuk, some learn it from a different one. We're going to see further on the Amud, we're going to see what Rav Akiva learns from the word mincha in this pasuk. So now continuing on this, what else do we learn from the names of the different korbanos mentioned in this pasuk? So when it says chatos, when it mentions the chatos in this list of korbanos, we learn from that. Now we've been discussing in this sugya the matter of bolua, the matter of when that if a that kol hashe yigav v'sara yikdash, anything that touches and absorbs from the flesh of the chatos becomes holy, as we talked about. If it's kodshim kalim, then it itself and the chatos itself was kosher, then the kodshim kalim are now considered like kodshe kodshim and have to follow their rules as far as who and where can eat it. If the chatos was posel and the other korban absorbed from it, then the other korban also becomes posel, as we were discussing yesterday. So now we learn from that. Ma chatos miskadeshes bevalua, just like a chatos becomes holy through absorption into another food. Hagoyes Habach changes it to not miskadeshes, which would be the passive form, but mikadeshes, that it is mekadesh, namely exactly that. The chatos is mekadesh, a different korban that touches it. The same way every other korban has the same rule. So the same idea, in other words, if you were to have, let's say, a shlomim, that imparted taste or flavor into chulin or into another korban, then it would have the din of then another korban of lesser, you don't really have anything less than a shlomim in terms of who can eat it and where it can be eaten and so forth. But whatever, the point is that any other korban has the same rules, that if it touches another korban and the other korban absorbs from it, then it becomes also like it. So that's what we learn from chatas in that pasuk. Next, osham, what do we learn from the listing of osham in that pasuk? We learn like this. Ma osham ein shvir v'shuya kodesh boy. When it comes to an osham is always a male animal. A chatas is generally a female. An oila is also a male, but from oila we already learned something else. Some korbanos, as we know, some korbanos have to be only males, oila and osham, and all korbanos sivir. Some korbanos can be male or female, such as a shlomim, and some of them almost exclusively are females, namely a chatos. The only chatos we have that are males are the chatos of a king, and then the various special, the chatos hapnimius, which anyway aren't eaten. So we learn like this, an osham being a male, ein shvir v'shul yakodesh by a placenta or an amniotic sac. Actually, the other way around. Shvir is a fetus where you have the skin of it, but you have the skin of it. You have the outer layer of it, but the inside of it is not necessarily completely formed. It may have been liquefied or something. That kind of thing is called shvir, from the word shveferes, which means a tube, because it's like a tube containing flesh or dissolved flesh. Shilia would be the placenta, and more generally the amniotic sac that it's attached to. Anyway, so those are not kodesh boy. Those are not holy in it, for the simple reason that an osham is a male and it never gives birth to a shvir or shilia. So therefore we learn from that, af kol ein shvir v'shuya kodesh boy. So we learn by all other korbanos, the same is true, and a shvir and shilia are not kodesh in it. Meaning, now Rashi explains that means as far as the chelev or shtei kloyes. Now you have the shvir, this unformed or partially formed baby. At some point in its development, and it may even be, it may have gotten to the stage of development where it has actual internal organs that are noticeable. So it's going to have kidneys. It's going to have chelev. Nevertheless, though, we don't say when we're offering the chalev of the mother animal in the case of other korbanos, we don't say, since this is what we're learning from Osham. By an Osham, by definition, you're never going to have that there will be a baby inside its womb that then you would have to talk about what you do with its chalev or shtei kloyes. We learn from that to other korbanos that even a chatas or a shlomin, that even if they do happen to be pregnant and have a shir or shulya, you do not take the chalev or shtei kloyes of that unborn baby and offer it on the mizbeach. Now, Rashi points out the reason why we're not learning it from Ola. Well, anyway, we learned something else from Ola, but Rashi points out a much better reason. The reason is because an Ola is unique among all these korbanos that are listed over here, in that's completely burnt on the Mizbeach. So therefore, and you can't really say, because it's not in the case of an Ola, the whole thing is burnt. In the case of the other korbanos, the whole thing is not burnt. So this is what we're learning from Osham. This point that a shir and shulya are not kaddish. So according to Rashi, then again, we're talking about the chelav or shtei kloyes. Tosfos disagrees with that on a number of grounds, and says that no, what we mean is that the unborn baby of a chatas or a shlomim or whatever other female korban, have no kedusha at all. So it is true that even if there's an unborn baby in there, it is true that we don't offer the chelav or shtei kloyes, but that actually, that Tosfos says is a different gemara in Chulin, from which we learn that we don't offer those. But here what we're saying is that the whole unborn baby is not considered kaddish, which means, the gemara says, kasavar, first of all, the Tana of this Braisa holds, vlodis kodshim bahava yosan hen kedoshim. First of all, the Tana of this Braisa then holds that unborn babies of Kodshim become Kodesh only when they're actually, only have a Yosan, only when they're actually born. Meaning exactly that, in other words. So if you have, let's say, you have an animal that you designated as a Shlomim or Chatas, and it's pregnant, and we're going to learn in the Masechta Tzemura in particular, we'll learn, Bez Hashem, about the various permutations, if it was pregnant already when you designated it, if it became pregnant only afterwards, etc. Anyway, you have different opinions on the subject. In what cases, or do we ever say, that the unborn babies of these Korbanos themselves have Kedusha, because they're considered a limb of the mother, Uber Yerach Imayu? Do we say that, or do we say no? When the baby is born, then it's able to become Kodesh, but not before that. The Tana of this Braisa holds that they cannot, and therefore he's able to learn from Osham. And furthermore, now you could say, well, what kind of proof is that? Of course an Osham doesn't have a Shlil or a Shulya or an unborn baby, it's a male. How do you prove from that to cases of Korbanos that can be female? Because this Tana holds, but done in Efsha Mishi Efsha. This Tana holds, that doesn't matter. You can still learn something that's possible from something that's impossible. The fact that by an Osham it's biologically impossible for it to have a Shvir or Shulya, that doesn't change the fact. But the fact is it doesn't, and therefore we can derive from that to Korbanos that biologically are able to have one, and just we're saying in practice that Shvir or Shulya will not actually be Kaddish. So according to the Tana of this Braisa, this is what we learn from the mention of Osham in this connection, this concept, this din about the Shvir and Shulya and about what happens with them. Okay. Next, the next thing listed in the pasuk is Miluim, is the Korbanos Miluim, the inauguration Korbanos that they brought when the Mishkan was dedicated. So what do we learn from that? Ma Miluim Masrein Beslefa. First of all, the Miluim, what's left over of them have to be burnt. The pasuk tells us by the Miluim, whatever is left over of the meat and of the mincha and whatever has to be burnt once it's beyond the time. So we learn from that to other korbanos as well, and also the ein balik chayim b'meisrehen. And another point as well, by the miluim, there were no living animals in their leftovers. Namely, in other words, now you can have a case when an individual is going to bring a korban, he might set aside a second such korban as what's called lachrayus. As a backup, basically, he might say, for example, I have to bring a chatas, or I obligated myself, and therefore I have to bring a shlomim, or what have you, just in case something goes wrong with this animal, it's lost, it develops a mum, etc. Well, mum wouldn't really be an issue, it would be poide, and buy another one. I'll take it's lost. So let's say it gets lost, so he designates to begin with another animal as a backup. This is called lachrayus. Now, by the miluim, they didn't do that, and the result is, therefore, that And the result is, therefore, when we talk about what happens to the leftovers, we say the leftover meat and whatever has to be burnt, but there's no leftover live animals to be burnt. They were korban sibur. Nobody set one aside l'achrayus in the first place. You also don't have, Rashi points out, it didn't happen, because if it did, the Torah would have recorded that one of them got lost and they had to get a different one, and then the original one turned up. Nothing of that happened. Nothing of that happened. And therefore, we can learn from that af kol mesrei and besrefa, the same way we can learn to all other korbanos, that the leftover meat or whatever it is that's left over from the korban beyond the deadline has to be burnt. But we also have the ein balik chayim, the mesrehen, but we also don't say that we should have to burn the leftover live animals, namely in a case of an individual's korban where there was achrayus, where there was one set aside for achrayus, or where there was one set aside and then got lost and then another one and then used another one and then the original one turned up. We wouldn't say that you have to burn those animals, because after all, it's noiser, it's left over. We would say those have other dinim. Generally speaking, the din in such cases of achrayus is usually that we're going to leave it until it develops a mum and then sell it and use the money for that type of korban. There's certain cases, particularly with a chatas, where if we leave it to die, etc. We'll learn all about that in the Sefer Tzmura, that's the Shem in detail. So this is what we learn from the Miluim, that first of all, that the noiser meat has to be burnt, or noiser meat, or mincha, or whatever. And second of all, that noiser for this purpose does not include live animals that are left over by having been separated for achrayus or because the original one was lost and they used a different one, etc. The Sfasemis brings from a Rashi Ksavyan that there may well have been living ones, but that the Pasuk is talking about when you have to burn, talks about only mibsarah, or whatever the Lashon HaPasuk is, only what's left over from the meat of the korbanos has to be burnt, implying but not the living animals. So even if it did happen, we don't know. Maybe indeed, the Sadashi Ksaviyad is saying, maybe indeed there was a case where one of the animals got lost and they had to bring another one or whatever. But nevertheless, the Pasuk by saying that if there's left over from the meat of the korban or from the bread, then you have to burn it, implies only that, not the animals. So that, or not the live animals. So in turn, we learn from that, from the Miluim, to all other types of korbanos. Okay. Shlomim, what do we learn from the shlomim to all the other korbanos? That we learn, as we said, we learned at the beginning of the Masechta. Ma shlomim, faglin, or misfaglin, just like a shlomim is able to make something piggle, is able to make the nesachim that go with it piggle, or misfaglin, and they're able to become piggle themselves, as we learned at the beginning of the Masechta. Now the Torah mentions the concept of pigle specifically in connection with shlomim, that if he eats of it on the third day, and we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, that means if he has in mind to eat from it on the third day, then it becomes pigle. And we learned also that if the korban itself becomes pigle, then the nesachim, the flour and wine and oil that are supposed to go together with it, also become pigle. Well, so we see that by shlomim. That's mifaglin, they're able to make something else pigle, namely their nesachim, or mispaglin, and they themselves are able to become pigle, when he has in mind to eat a kezias of it, then the whole thing becomes outside, beyond the time, then the whole thing becomes pigle. Achom, mifaglin and mispaglin, the same way we learn from that, for every other type of korban, that the same thing, that pigle applies to them, and that they're able, and that if you have in mind by the korban itself, then the nesachim that go with it also become pigle. That's Rashi. Tosfos points out the chinam dochak. Rashi had to make a dochak over here for no reason. We don't really need to say mefaglin in the sense that it affects the nesachim. We could say very simple, for example, that the blood is mefagel the meat, because as we learned back when we learned the dinim of pigle in great detail, we talked about if he has in mind, for example, to sprinkle the blood the next day. So even though he's only thinking about the blood, the meat becomes pigle. So that's another meaning of mispaglin. You know, of mifaglin, rather, that one part of the korban is able to make another one pigle. You don't have to say, as Rashi says, necessarily that it's referring to the nesachim, even though that is perfectly true, but we don't have to be doichik like that and say it means only that. Okay, so that is what we learned from shlomim. Okay, that thus far the b'raisa. Now the Gemara brings Masnisa Tana Mishmei de Rabbi Akiva. In a Braisa, they learned, they taught in the name of Rabbi Akiva a difference by some of these. Some of these Rabbi Akiva agrees are the same thing. The Ola, he agrees, we learn from that you need a machelas, that you need a knife in order to shecht it, and from that we learn that all other korbanos are the same way. Shittim Kubetzes, by the way, points out another meaning as well. Another meaning of mefaglin can be when it comes to the shealechem and the sheep that go together with them, that if he has in mind doing the sheep, a thought of pigle, then the shealechem also become pigle. And the same way we learn from that, the way the limud would be, since the Pasuk says the concept of pigle by shlomim, then we can extend it also to zivchei shalmei tzibur, these shlomim of the tzibur, namely these sheep that are brought as a korban together with the shelachem, and from that we can learn to any other case where we bring something together with a korban, such as a toidah, for example. We can learn the same case that if the korban becomes pigle, then we don't have to say like Rashi the nesachim. We can say it means the edible parts that go together with it, such as the shealechem or such as the bread with a toidah, etc. Okay. So the Gemara says, Masnisa Tana Mishmei de Rabbi Akiva. In a Braisa, they taught in the name of Rabbi Akiva a different limud by several of these korbanos. Again, by some of them, it's exactly that by Oila, he agrees. It means that we learn from that you need a machelas, that you need a knife. But mincha, what do we learn from the mincha? So before we said that we had learned from the mincha that only the male koyanim can eat it, and we asked, but what are we learning from that? The chatas and asham and zivchei sham and tzibul, we know that from other psukim. And we know from other psukim, and of course the shlomim that are mentioned in the pasuk are not edible, are not eaten only by male koyanim, they can be eaten by anybody. So now Rabbi Akiva, so we said that okay, some learn it from here, some learn it from there. So now the Gemara says Rabbi Akiva learns from mincha something else. Ma mincha miskadeshes bebalua, just like a mincha is able to become holy by absorbing from something else. So again, mikadeshes, like we said before, the same idea. This pasuk that we talked about that said koilashigiga, anything that touches it becomes holy. That applies that you have such a pasuk by a chatas, you also have such a pasuk by the mincha. Well, then, the same way. Now, the Gemara is going to explain soon. In that case, it points out about kibbutz. Why do we need two psukim? But we can learn the same kind of thing, just like a mincha. When if something else touches it and absorbs from it, then it becomes kodesh as well, and now it has the din of a mincha. Af kol miskadeshes b'vum, miskadeshes b'valua. The same thing. Anything else that is the same thing. Any other korban is also able to do that. So we can learn that from the hekesh with mincha. Okay. In which case then the Gemara interjects. Now we said by mincha, we said by the chatos, it says the same thing. So why indeed does the pasuk need to tell us this concept twice? So the Gemara says ve'itzrich l'michtav mincha ve'itzrich l'michtav chatos. In fact, it does need to say it both by mincha and by chatos. The Iyashmin in Mincha, if he had told us only by Mincha, you would say, you know why? By Mincha, this din applies, Aydi Dirakicha, because a Mincha, after all, is salt. It's made out of flour and oil, so it's very easy for it to be absorbed into something else. If meat touches it, then it's going to penetrate really deeply. Avol Chatas, but a Chatas, if you have meat touches meat, it doesn't necessarily absorb so much. Emala, you would say not. Especially in Hilchos Talrubis, for example, you have discussion over there. It depends. For example, if a piece of meat is fatty, then yeah, if its taste can more easily penetrate something. Well, if you have a piece of fatty meat touches something which is treif, then yes, it can more easily absorb the tarifus or the taste of the other thing or whatever, because by virtue of the fat, it will spread out throughout the whole thing. But if not, if it's lean meat, then not. But a mincha has oil in it, so of course it's soft, it's oily. Of course it's going to penetrate into the other thing. But by avachatas, by a chatas, you might have thought that not. The Iyashmin and Chatas, and conversely, if you told us by a Chatas, you would say, on the contrary, you know why this applies to a Chatas? Mishum de Korir, because in a way it is able to penetrate, because you have a fat piece of meat over there, therefore the fattiness of what it touched is able to penetrate very deeply into it. Ava mincha, but a mincha is, after all, it's not a solid substance, it's flour mixed with water. Emalo, you would think maybe it doesn't penetrate that much. Tzricha, and therefore, says Rav Akiva, you need to be told, both by the mincha and the chatas, this concept that if something touches it, it becomes kodesh, because each one has physical characteristics, physical properties that the other one doesn't have, and therefore it needs to be shown that the same din applies to both of them. Okay. Next. Rav Akiva continues, what do we learn from Chatas when it says Chatas in the Pasuk? So before we said we learned from that the concept of Bolua. Rav Akiva is saying you don't really need that. We said that we do in fact have this din in both places. Rav Akiva is not required to say that. Rav Akiva can say that we don't need that. Once we say that it applies to a mincha, then it applies across the board. One of the Mefarshim points out that, first of all, it is true that Rabbi Akiva knows it does say about the Chatas. He doesn't learn from the Chatas to other things because he's learning something else from the Chatas in this passage, but nevertheless, the fact is, according to him, it does say that. But another point as well is that we know Ein Meshivin Ala Hekesh. When we have a Hekesh, we cannot refute it no matter how logical it seems to refute it. Now, Rabbi Akiva is saying that we have a Hekesh over here to learn about Balua, so he doesn't care the fact that a Mincha is physically different than a Chatas. But Gemara was just asking for us, for the rest of the Chachamim who don't agree with Rabbi Akiva, why, according to them, would it need to say this point by a Mincha and by a Chatas? Okay. So next, what is Rabbi Akiva learning from Chatas? Ma Chatas, ein ba element acholin, just like a Chatas can come only from cholin. You can't have, for example, you can't have, for example, Maisa Sheni money, and then you say, well, I have to bring a Chatas, so let me use some of this Maisa Sheni money to buy a Chatas. You can't do that, as the Gemara will point out soon. So just like a Chatas, you can buy only from cholin, and it has to be done only by day, because we know that by a Chatas, particularly because it says by the Chatas of Yom Kippur. Ki vayoyim hazeh yichafer aleichem. So we see that korban, specifically it says, it doesn't really say explicitly so much in the Pasuk. You have elsewhere, the Gemara is actually going to point out in a few lines, we do. The Gemara elsewhere points out that we learn from the words the fact that it says, B'yoyim savoysoy, that korbanos have to be brought by day. So the Gemara is going to ask why we need this limud over here. We'll get back to that in a minute. Anyway, so a chatas has to come only minacholin, over yoyim, and it has to be brought dafka by day, over yodei hayimonis, and the avoid of it has to be done dafka with his right hand. So we learn from that other korbanos are the same kind of thing. So afkol, the same thing, every other korban, ein abo, element acholin, can come only from cholin, and it has to be dafka by day and dafka with his right hand. There are certain limited cases where you can bring a korban from Maisa Sheni money. In particular, if a person has Maisa Sheni money, he can use it to buy a shlomim, and bring that as a korban. Now, it can't be a shlomim that he's already obligated to bring. So, for example, he can't use it, let's say, for his shalmei chagiga, for the chagiga that he's required to bring when he comes to the bismithash on the shalosh regalim, because that's an independent chiyuv, and for that, he can't be using maisa sheni money. But let's say a person comes to Yerushalayim with a bunch of maisa sheni money, and he wants to buy an animal to do for a shlomim, that he's not only allowed to do, but in many cases the chachamim require that if he's going to be buying an animal that he uses it for that and not for cholin meat. So there are limited cases where you can use Maisa Sheni money for a korban, but basically the point is that it has to be a korban that you're not otherwise obligated in. Okay, so that's something that we learn from Chatas. So the Gemara says the Chatas Menolon. Well, let's see by the Chatas itself. How do we know that it has to come from Cholin specifically? Amar of Chista, Omakra, the Hikriv Aaron as para Chatas Ashaloi. Because the Pasuk says, again, by the Tau Yom Kippurim, the bull that the Kohen Gadol brings as a Chatas on Yom Kippur, the Pasuk says that that Aaron and the Kohen Gadol after him should offer the para Chatas Ashaloi, that is to him, from which we learn, Mishaloi Veloi Mishal Tzibur. From that we learn that it has to be from his own personal funds, not from the funds of the Tzibur. And also not from Maiser Sheni. The fact that it says that it has to be that's Asher Loi. So once we see that by a Chatas, and it doesn't matter which kind of Chatas, then we can derive from it by the Hekesh to all the other Korbanos. Okay, the Gemara says by Yoim, we said one thing is it has to be done by day. We don't need this pasuk over here. We don't need to learn it from a Chatas. We can learn that from the fact that it says, on the day that Hashem commanded. This is actually the next pasuk after you have the pasuk with the whole list of korbanos, la'olah, la'mincha, la'chatas, la'osham, etc. The next pasuk continues, And as the next pasuk finishes off, "B'yom tzavoyseis b'nei Yisrael," on the day that Hashem commanded b'nei Yisrael to bring their korbanos, and that means we learn from that that korbanos has to be brought only by day. So the Gemara says, "You're right, k'di nasva." You're right. He didn't mention that, so he mentioned that unnecessarily. It's true. The fact that a korban has to be brought b'yom, we learn. We don't learn, in fact, from the hekesh with a hatas. We learn from that pasuk. Okay. What about the yodeh hayimonis? He said that a korban has to be offered using the right hand. Same question. Don't we learn that from what Rav Baba Chana said? Wherever it says in the pasuk, we learn this earlier in the Masechta. Wherever the pasuk says that the avodah of a korban has to be done with a finger, namely in the case of a chatas, where it says that he dips his finger in and daubs the blood, Ukahuna, or where it says the word koyin or a koyanim, ena ela yamin, that it means dafka, the right hand, which in turn we learn from the fact that by a mitzvah, it says that the koyin should apply the blood to his ear, thumb, and toe, that he should first sprinkle the blood with his finger, and there it specifically says that's a kavala koyin, as it's boy hayimonis. So it clearly says over there the right. So therefore, we learn from that whenever it says koyin and or etzva, then it means the right hand. So then we know automatically from that. So at this point, the Gemara is assuming that it means whether it says either etzva or korban, and in that case, then it says that by all the korbanos. And the answer is the Gemara says again, k'di nasva. You could say that the Tana mentioned it unnecessarily. It's true that we learn that from a different place. The Iboyas Ema, but here we have a different answer. You could say the Tana of this Braisa that we just quoted holds like Reb Shimon de Omar, where he says not necessarily. He says etzba like boya kuhuna. When it says etzba, it doesn't need to also say koyim. Just saying the word etzba by itself means taka, the right finger. Therefore, he says, for example, the daubing of the blood of the chatas has to be done with the finger of the right hand. Kohuna, boya etzva, but Reb Shimon holds that if it says kohuna, if it says koyan or koyanim, then it still needs to say etzva, and otherwise it can in fact be done with the left hand, which in fact we learned earlier in the Masechta that therefore Reb Shimon had said that if the Kabbalah, that's the Kabbalah Saddam, or the Halacha, was done with the left hand, it would be fine, because by them it says kohuna, but it doesn't say etzva. Now, by most korbanos, it also doesn't say etzva. Therefore, we need to learn, even according to Reb Shimon, that most of their avodas have to be done with the right hand, is because of the hekesh for the chatas. So you said Reb Shimon says there are certain limited things that can be done with the left hand, as we learned earlier in the Masechta. But nevertheless, according to him, you need the hekesh with a chatas in order to teach us that most other avodas do need to be done with the right hand. Tosfos points out, you know, earlier in the Masechta, we had the whole extensive discussion about when we learn lamed min alamed, when we learn one thing from another in Kodshim, and then we want to learn a third thing from the second thing. When does that work? When does it not? The fact is, we learn the Chatas itself from Zerub Shabbat with the Mitzvah, and then in turn, we want to learn from that to a Hekesh to other Korbanos. We may not be able to do that. So the Gemara had discussed before and said that we may not, and then brought an opinion that said we can't do that. So then, in fact, the Gemara can't use the answer over here, that it would follow Reb Shimon. Necessarily, then, we would have to say K'di Nasva, that the Mishnah meant, that the Braisa mentioned it unnecessarily, because, in fact, it's true that we don't learn the fact that it has to be done with the right hand from the Chatas, because that necessarily we have to learn in a different way in order not to violate that rule of Lamed Min Alamed. Okay, according to that, then that's what we learn from the comparison with the Chatas, is, so we said three things, that it has to be from his own money, it has to be by day, and it has to be with his right hand. So we said his own money, that we definitely learn, that it has to be by day, we actually learn from a different place, and that it has to be with his right hand, that'll depend on a Macholik, the Reb Shimon, and the Chachamim. Okay, Osham, what do we learn from the mention of Osham in this pasuk? We can learn Ma Osham Atzmosim Mutarin, just like an Osham, the bones of it are mutter. So what does that mean? Now, first of all, what does that mean? It means, in other words, that when you eat it, how do we know? Because when an Osham, you eat it, and we don't find afterwards that you have to burn the bones. So Rashi says two explanations. One is that you're allowed to make kalim of them, which we learned earlier We learned previously in Or Masechta that that's the case, that in general the bones of all korbanos are not osa b'hana afterwards, and you are allowed to make kelim out of them. So we can learn that from an osham. So Rashi explains that you're allowed to make them from them kelim, and the reason is how do we learn that from an osham? Because an osham is eaten by the kohenim, and noiser would apply only to parts that are edible, since bones are not edible, since bones are not edible, then noiser doesn't apply to them, and therefore they can be made into kelim. But Rashi says in that case, then we could have equally well learned that from a chatas. So why are we learning that specifically from an osham? So rather, Rashi says that we can learn it from the fact that by an osham, there's an extra phrase, lo yiyah. It's a lakoyan lo yiyah. The osham is to be eaten by the koyanim, and it says the koyan who does the kapara of it, lo yiyah, to him it will be. So from that extra phrase, we can learn that he's allowed to use the bones. So that's the point of Rashi. Tosfos then goes on and discusses this and explains that we could have equally well learned it from Rashi explains the point is that by most kodshim that are eaten the svara is fairly obvious. You don't really need it. Once you find it by an ashram, then the same thing will apply to all korbanos that are eaten. What you would need it for is for an oila. You would think an oila is not eaten. Maybe indeed the bones of it should be also as well. And after all, normally the whole oila, bones and all, is burnt on a mizbeach. But as we learned earlier, in our Masechta, if the bones were separated from it before they went on a mizbeach, and that was an example of him, olu yerdu, in that case, such bones, even if they're taken onto the mizbeach, are to be taken down, as we learned back in the ninth parak, then you can even make things out of them. In any case, so we have to learn that. Tosfos has some further questions on that explanation. And basically, Tosfos says, listen, you know, every other korban we already learned something else. Every other korban we learned something else, and therefore. Now we're not going to learn the business about shvir and shuya that we said before, that an osham is a male and therefore it never has a shvir and shuya, and we learned from that to all the other korbanos, because this opinion would hold either that the shvir and shuya does have a degree of kedusha even in the womb, or he would hold ain't done an efshe mishii efshe, that you can't, just because an osham is biologically impossible, we can't learn from it to other korbanos. So instead we need to learn something else from an osham, and this is the only thing that's the only other thing that's available to learn is this. So Tosfos goes on and discusses other details of why we would learn this point about the bones being mutter dafka from an osham. So the Gemara says like this. So now we've gone through all the korbanos that are listed in that pasuk, and we've shown how, according to different tanoim, we learn something from each of them to all the other korbanos. Now, let's get back to the beginning of our perek, where we talked about the dinim of the blood of chatas squirting onto clothing, where we said that clothing now has to be washed in the azara. So now let's deal with the detail within that. Omar Rava, pshitali. So Rava starts off by saying, it is obvious to me the following fact. Dam chatas lamata, but dam oila lamaila. Suppose you have that blood of chatas got onto the clothing first, and then the blood of the oila second. So first blood of chatas splashed onto clothing, and then blood of oila right on top of it. There's no question, says Rava, ton kibbutz, that clothing is going to require kibbutz, is going to require being washed in the azara, because the blood of the chatas had penetrated into the clothing. And it's touching the clothing and penetrating into it. Boy Rava, but Rava asked the question, what about the other way around? Dam oila lamata, but dam chatas lamaila. What happens if the blood of the oila is below? It fell on the clothing first, and then dam chatas on top of that. Mahu, then what would we say? Negeahu, would we say the point, mishum negeahu, is the point that it has to be touching? Well, v'ha negeah, it is touching, in fact. The blood of the chatas is touching the beged. So because, as Rashi points out, the blood of the Ola gets absorbed into the Begin. So now when the blood of the Chatas falls on top of it, it's not just falling on, if you have, let's say, if instead of a Begin, if we were talking about, let's say, a plastic sheet or something, then sure, you could say the blood of the Chatas that gets on it afterwards is not necessarily touching it at all, because it's only touching the blood underneath it. But here, where it's clothing, where it's cloth, the blood of the Ola gets absorbed into that, and then the blood of the Ola falls on that. That's touching the Begin as well. So therefore, maybe it should be required. So therefore, it should require why kibbutz? Are you doing from baluo? Or maybe the point is that it gets absorbed into the cloth. Well then, holoi bola, and here it's not going to absorb it because it's already absorbed as much as it can from the blood of the oil. So therefore, so it shouldn't require kibbutz. After Rava asked the question, Hodir Poshta, then Rava answered the question, the intonant kibbutz. In fact, in that case, it will not require kibbutz because the primary thing is that the primary thing is that it needs to be absorbed, and here it's here it didn't get absorbed. So you don't need to wash it in the azar. On the other hand, the Keren Oda points out you would at least have to scrape it off, similar to we learned earlier in the Perek, that if the blood gets on a hard thing, which is not subject to kibbutz, then you have to scrape it off, so here would, because it doesn't get absorbed, so here would be the same thing, you would have to do that as well, you would have to scrape it off. This is also relevant to, we had a discussion earlier in our Perek when we were talking about this whole matter of kibbutz. We had a discussion over there relating to this point about when you had a case over there, Rami Bahama had asked if the beggar was tummy and then the blood splashed on it. So now the moment it touches the beggar, it becomes tummy, and therefore it's possible that blood. Do you need to do kibbutz or not? And we had a whole discussion about it in the Gemara. So one thing is we talked about over there that our Gemara over here is relevant because our Gemara makes it clear that ultimately the matter is when it gets absorbed, and therefore by the time it gets absorbed, it first touches the beggar. The moment it touches it, it becomes tummy, and therefore by the time it gets absorbed, which we're saying in our Gemara over here, the key thing is when it gets absorbed, then by that time it's already tummy, it's already puzzle, and therefore that would answer that question over there, and we would say that after all, as we're saying over here, then it doesn't require kibbutz, because by the time it would reach the point of being chayav in it, then it's tummy and it's puzzle. Okay. Omar Rava, so in this connection, by the way, talking about cases of blood on top of blood, so Rava digresses to ask another point as well. We know there's a concept of chafitza. We know that when you're toveling, you yourself are toveling, or you're toveling a beged or a keli or whatever, there can't be a chafitza. So now, Omar Rava, so here's another example. Pshitali, it is obvious to me the following din by way of background. Dam al bigdei chotzitz. There's no question if a person has blood on his clothing and he wants to toivel that clothing, then that blood is a chatzitza and he would need to clean it out first. The imtabahu, however, Rava says, if the person who owns that clothing is a butcher and he regularly has blood on his clothing and he's not makbid, eni chotzitz, then it's not chotzitz. The rule with chatzitza is as follows. Midah raisa, something is a chatzitza only if it covers most of the person or the object and he's makbid on it and wants to remove it. If it's anything other than that, midah raisa, it's not a chatzitza. Midrabanan, if it's one or the other, then it's a chatzitza. If either it covers most of it or if he's makbid. So here Rava is talking about that, it's not covering most of it. It's not covering most of it, and he's not makbid because he's a butcher and he's not makbid on blood stains on his clothing. Therefore, it's not considered a chatzitza. One of the Mephoshim says, actually, maybe even we're talking about that it was covering most of it, and we're saying, though, that at least on a Daraisa level, it wouldn't be a chatzitza, and therefore by butcher, we wouldn't worry about it at all. And furthermore, Rava says, Revava, on the other hand, if there's grease on his clothing, chotzitz, then grease on clothing is also a chatzitza. But again, the mocher revavu, if this is a person who sells grease for a living, ain't a chotzitz, then it's not chotzitz for the same reason, because he has such stains on his clothing all the time. So now, Rashi describes that revav is a general term for anything that can be melted, anything that can be melted down. So examples are fat of various kinds, wax, etc. All of those are in the category of revav. So a regular person, that would be chatzitza on his clothing, but somebody who sells revav for a living is not. By the way, the Gemara mentions in Sota, doing that kind of thing, having to sell revav for a living was considered an extremely degrading kind of profession. The Gemara mentions at the end of Sota that David HaMelech especially davened for us Jewish people that we shouldn't be reduced to being mochri revav, otherwise if it hadn't been for his tefillah, all of us would be so desperately poor that that would be the only way we could eke out a living with the David HaMelech daven, that instead the Eibush should give us parnasa b'shefa, and we should all be zoicha to see that bracha openly. In any case, so now, boy Rava, now with that background, Rava asks the question, dam urevav al bigdoy mam? What about if he has blood and grease on his clothing? Would it be a chatzitza? So you ask, what's the question? Im tabahu, if a fellow is a butcher, typically mishum revav. Of course it's a chatzitza, fine. He doesn't care about the blood, but he does care about the grease. He doesn't normally have grease stains on his clothing. V'im mocher revavhu, and if he's a grease seller, typically mishum dam. Then you have the other way around. It would be a chatzitza because of the blood. So what is the case that Rava is even asking about? The answer is loy tzricha, the case, we don't need it. We don't need what Rava was asking, only for the case, ovid ha v'ha. Of course, he does both. He's a butcher and he also sells grease. So now the question is, achodol a kopid, a tarte kopid, do we say maybe he's not makbid on only one type of stain, but maybe two of them together he would be makbid on? It is true that he's used to, it's true, Rashi points out, he is used to doing both of them, but it's still a gnai, it's still an embarrassment for him that both of them should be on his clothing at the same time. So maybe that's so. Oduma, Tauki, Nami like Kopid, or maybe he's not mafid on two of them together either, because the fact is he does sell meat, he does cut up and sell meat, and therefore he regularly has blood stains on his clothing. He does sell fat, and therefore he has revav on his clothing. So maybe he's not mafid on them either, even in combination. So the Gemara says teku, and therefore you should not tovel the clothing in that condition. Instead, make sure to clean off the stains first, because otherwise you may not have a valid tefillah. Hadron aloch dam chatas. Okay. Tomorrow.